I'm Cameron Esposito, the host of Wham Bam Pow. This is a movie show, a podcast focused on action and sci-fi films. Oof, we are here. Well, two of us are here.
Some of us.
The Afro spokesman, Mr. Ricky Carmona, is on tour. What it do, Ricky? We miss ya.
Threesis, Ricky. Threesis.
Yes, that's the name of his tour. Threesis.
Yep.
But the
What it do, people? Sorry, I jumped the gun.
Well, I said what it do, Ricky. So yeah. I was trying to. But you're right. You should.
I was trying to do a Ricky too. I mean, yeah. I figured we both needed
cacao!
To do Ricky.
Yeah. So that's the Lady James Dean, Miss Rhea Butcher.
That's me.
Popping in right now. How you doing, Rhea?
I'm pretty good. I just did Mr. Kumail Nanjiani's podcast, The X-Files Files.
And I feel like there's some overlap probably with our listenership.
Huge amount of overlap. You guys like The X-Files, right? None of you hate it.
It scares the crap
out
of me.
I feel like nobody.
I can't really watch it. That worm guy. Remember the worm guy? Was there a worm guy?
Probably.
Okay.
At some point, yes.
Like
here's the thing about The X-Files. I love it. I'm not, however, a super nerd about it, because it was one of those things that, like, I watched it when it was on, and then I caught maybe some reruns, was into the movies, was really into it, but it's just, like, in that perfect age of being, like, I don't want to be
You're funny, though.
You know what I mean?
You're funny, though, because when you are a nerd about something, you're all the way. So I know that. Because I know you well enough, I know that you're like, I don't know that much about X-Files, but like you probably know
it's like
episode
a lot.
Titles.
Yeah, sure,
and you're
yeah.
like, but like that's like the fourth season. Like I just didn't know too much about like the third and
no, I'm honestly I'm not.
Like the,
I couldn't tell you that because it's too many seasons. It's nine seasons. You know?
Even the fact that you know that.
The fact that I know that,
with?
Yes, I understand.
Okay.
But I think that I'm a couple clicks
north. Remember those people under the stairs?
No,
I
live
there.
I
think. I don't know. This is the
You're
stuff
just
I
making
know about
stuff up.
No, I think there's a worm guy and a people under the stairs one.
Probably.
I'm pretty sure those are in there.
Anyway, I had a great time, and he does some really fun stuff on his show.
It's called The X-Files.
The X-Files Files.
And it's on Feral Audio.
It is on Feral Audio and on iTunes and stuff like that. And yeah, it's very fun.
What else is
Check
going on
it out.
With you?
You know, just the usual.
Did you get any sort of presents or anything?
Did I get it? Oh, yes, I did get a present. Well, it's to the three of us.
Yeah, but
technically it's to me.
Why don't you introduce it?
Our pal Lauren in North Carolina sent us a package to the three of us because she so enjoyed our show that she binge listened.
All of them at once. We're like, Orange is the new us.
Yeah. You're Alex, and I will be
MP Keaton.
Whatever. Yeah, Alex P. Keaton.
Thank you. That's
sure.
funny.
Great job. Young Republicans. She sent us, specifically me, the Back to the Future DeLorean Lego set.
Oh, man. And did it hold up in your hands? Like, when you finally got
Oh, yeah.
Your hands
I held
on
it
the
up in my hands as though it were Simba.
Right. You introduced it to
and
the pride.
And I was Mufasa?
Yeah,
did I get
that's
that right?
Who that is.
Oh, uh-huh. God.
And then Scar's the bad one, which,
yeah.
you know,
which
probably
is you.
In this case is me. There's a stampede.
You
and
were really slinking
pushed,
around behind
I
me.
I pushed you down there.
Tons of sibling rivalry happening.
Yeah, and a slinky dog.
And
with
a slinky dog.
Slinking around. Well, congratulations.
Thanks. I'm
Do
really
you
think
happy
you're
going to
open it? I'm totally going to open it. I'm going to put it together.
Like later tonight?
I just can't decide between which, because this is what I did not know about it, and thank you, Lauren, for sending it to me, because I wouldn't have known, because I would have just ignored the Lego set, because I didn't think I could afford it. That you can make all three DeLoreans.
Yes.
I did not know that.
And point out the one thing you also
of.
Noticed.
The multiple license plates?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is a big deal.
You get the out of time, and you get the UPC.
Man.
Not UPC code, because that would be redundant.
Wow. See? Do you see what I'm saying? Do you see what I'm saying, listeners? Yes, Cameron, what do? Did you hear them?
I did. I heard them all.
So I just also want to say, just first of all, thank you so much to everybody that's listening. I know that people sometimes come to see me doing live dates, so I will be in Montreal on July 24th through 26th for the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival. I will be in Madison, Wisconsin at Comedy Club on State, July 31st through August 2nd. Please, if you live in either of those cities, two M's, Montreal, Madison. I don't have too much else in common. Yeah, the old
Get yourself some Campbell's soup.
And
listen to the Crash Test Dummies and watch Cameron Esposito do comedy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, great job. Oh, yeah. Also, I just want to plug one more thing because I feel like listeners would be interested in this. And Rhea, you even revise these. So you have some vested interest in this as well, which is I write a column for the AV Club. That's about stand-up and about my life as a stand-up. And luckily, I have an in-house editor who reads all my columns before I send them in and tells me which things don't make sense. But that's at the AV Club. It's called Who in the World is Cameron Esposito? So if you're really interested in reading my voice as opposed to hearing it, I'd recommend checking that out. Okay, that's it for the plugs. We've got a great show today. Nitta's reviews things you can use, including a review of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which is currently in theaters. We'll be back with all that and more after this. Well, welcome back, and we have a specific focus on our movie news today. Now, Rhea and I saw Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. It was very early in the morning on the ape planet, and we were there. And we saw it together, and we both liked it. Early spoiler on our review, but also, just so you know, spoilers will follow for the entire movie.
There will be spoilers.
Look out.
In our review.
Look out.
Of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. But I will say that, as is often the case these days in movies, I noticed that the film has a woman problem. You also noticed this. There was a great tweet about that, too. Whose tweet was that?
Are you talking about Cassie?
Yeah.
Yes, she had a great Bechdel test tweet, right. Even counting lady apes.
Right, so the Bechdel test being Alison Bechdel, who's a writer and illustrator who came up with a concept that for a movie to really involve women, there should be at least one conversation between two women that's not about men. Is that the test?
Or male characters in the movie, you know?
Yes. Like, right, exactly. That's what I mean. Where they talk about something besides men around them.
Yes. Correct.
And so this tweet was that the movie didn't pass the Bechdel test, even including the lady apes, of which I think there's really just like one.
There's really just one.
Because all the other ones are kind of default male. Did you feel that way watching it?
Yeah, I mean, there were like surrounding lady apes up in the house. Let's not get into the.
Are you saying like ape handmaidens sort of a thing?
Yes.
Okay,
that's what I'm saying.
Like, because there's a queen.
There was more than one.
So there's a queen, and then there's like other, and they all have like headdresses on.
I mean, we could. I don't want to go too far down this road because I want to talk about it in the context of the movie.
Yes.
I'm just saying that
there was a couple that were indicated as being women, but I think other than that, there was a sort of a default assumption that everybody else was
correct.
They were male apes.
Correct. Which I think is the world of the movie. I don't actually think it's like us coming into it just assuming everything is male if it doesn't have a bow on its head. I actually think the movie itself made all of those apes male. That's what you're saying,
when
right?
When you sex one ape, right? Like when one ape has a headdress on, then it leads you to believe that it will be like a Mickey and Minnie situation.
Yes, where and one there are things that happen specifically later that I'm not going to say that then makes me retroactively believe that the movie considers all of the unadorned apes to be male.
Yes.
So.
Well, and I will also add that there's a lot of fighting. I mean, I don't think that's spoiling anything. There's fighting between humans and apes. That's kind of the whole point of all of the Planet of the Apes movies.
Yes.
And I think it is one of those situations where it's like an apocalyptic sort of a situation.
Sure.
Again, like all Planet of the Apes movies. And I don't feel like you're seeing a lot of women being involved in fighting on either side. And I think that's also something that whenever there's a movie about the apocalypse, I always think it's interesting when women are edited out, like as if at the end of time we would be like, are you sure you're the best soldier?
Right. You just stay home because like we're running out of resources.
Yeah.
And so we don't want you to waste our resources,
like,
which
we're
is
all
yourself.
Gonna die, but I don't want you to fuck up your shoes.
Yeah.
Like I
right.
feel like that's still something that pops up in movies a lot. Okay. So there's two great things that are happening on this front. And those are both the things that I wanted to talk about. One, Lucy coming out.
Yes.
Now, Lucy, Scarlett Johansson. It's funny. Scarlett Johansson and Morgan Freeman have, they're the two top billing. They have equal billing on this. And I don't know if you've seen that. Rhea, have you seen the billboards?
Yes, the black and white billboards.
And I don't know if you noticed this at all, but.
Oh, dear Lord. It's opposite.
Yes. Scarlett Johansson's name is in black and Morgan Freeman's name is in white because they were like, we gotta.
Yeah.
So that made me laugh a little bit. It's just her face up there, and it's her beautiful face. You know, she's a great-looking gal. But we also saw the trailer, and she's kicking some serious ass in this
Definitely.
Movie.
I think we both were like, oh, it's her.
Yes. Yes. She's the thing.
Yep.
there's no kind of propped up guy that she has to support.
You know what it looks like in the trailers? It's like if Run Lola Run wasn't about saving a dude.
Right. Or if Lola, first of all, awesome point.
Thank you.
Second of all, it's also as if Run Lola Run happened now.
Yes.
Because I think like that movie, when that movie came out, which is about, which is like a continuously shot movie about a woman running to try and get the money to pay off a drug dealer.
I guess it's been so long since I've seen it.
But when that movie came out, I remember that that was so, everybody was like, this is so high octane. But like our octane levels have absolutely changed.
I mean, that's,
because
yes.
Because even like the trailer of Lucy is like her waking up and being like, I have bad things in my stomach. Now I'm a powerful thing. Yeah. I run up a building. You know, like it's like everything now. But I'm glad she gets a chance to do that. I think if anybody can handle it, it's Scarlett Johansson, actually.
Absolutely. To speak to your point that you're just making of like super high octane, I feel like everything now is so fast. It moves so fast. Maybe this is just me turning into an old man yelling at a cloud, but it feels like movies move at the pace of, have you seen Requiem for a Dream?
Yes.
I feel
we
as
watched
though
it together.
All movie.
We did.
All right. Not going to debate you on that.
No, that
all
was the first time I saw it.
Move at the pace.
We didn't. I didn't see this with you?
No, you did not.
I did see this.
I have
with
not
you.
Seen this movie since I saw it the first time because it was that devastating to me. So
who
we did not watch it together.
With?
It was somebody else.
Like a casual friend?
A cash friend.
Oh, God.
Anyway, to just get to my point.
Sorry.
I feel like most movies, especially trailers, are edited in the same way that the like drug sequences are in that movie. Like our action movies go as fast as that movie, which is like the needle in the.
I saw it with my little sister. So I'm choking to death.
You want to say take that again?
I think I saw it with my little sister.
Oh, okay.
I remember.
Well, that's acceptable.
Is it?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, you shouldn't have been watching it with your little sister.
During
but
some of the parts.
Anyway.
Well, anyway.
That was a really long and rambling
Sorry.
Point. But
I apologize.
That we've distilled movies down to like a fast ass montage. Like everything is just
everything's like a speed trip.
Yeah. Like no wonder, you know, Skrillex is like, we can't process anything that isn't moving like 100 miles an hour.
Movies do look like Skrillex.
Yeah. It just. I think I've said this to you before that it feels like all sound designers these days have based their soundscapes off of dishwashers. And it is terrifying.
I'd also say that another thing that's happened is there's two things that are happening with trailers that kind of speak to this point, which mm-hmm. is. They try and do these over-the-top trailers so people actually go see the movie. So sometimes they blow stuff that I wish wasn't in the trailer.
Absolutely.
And that's why I hate like when they do multiple trailers
sure.
or like minisodes or whatever everybody's calling it.
Have you taken time and watched like old trailers? Like the trailers that we used to have?
Where
like
it's
Alfred
like,
Hitchcock? Where
he's
they're like,
a something
here's
this,
the movie.
And there's this Wonder Woman. Yeah.
He's the killer, but have fun, you know, like it just they. I mean, it's not a new. It's strange because it's not like a new concept, and I totally.
Okay. I guess I mean
get
they,
it,
they,
but it is also
they put
funny.
The
that
set
it's been
pieces
happening.
In there, for
sure.
That's what I'm talking about. Especially with action and sci-fi movies, sometimes
yes.
they take. Like,
I don't disagree.
The
with
moment
you.
When the plane crashes, like the
yeah.
the thing they spent all the money on, and then that's the thing. Anyway, but my point is,
and you're like, oh, that's the whole movie. Okay.
I also think trailers have enough stuff happening in them now that, like, in the past, that would have just been everything that happened in the entire movie.
Yes.
Like, there's 47 cars that are annihilated, and that's just, like, in 30 seconds. And then, but anyway, okay. So, Lucy, I'm really excited about it.
Yeah.
You're going to see it with me.
Yes, I'm going to go see it.
Okay. And do you have any reservations at all about Scarlett Johansson being in it? Because she's so sexy. That sometimes I wonder if she's
I do think
a too sexy.
That this Captain America Winter Soldier gave me some more hope.
She was balanced
for
in
her
that.
Like action chops and her acting chops, because actually I think she's gotten worse as an actor as the years have gone on, because she was great in Ghost World. And then
wow, Ghost World is where you're gonna hear
yes, that's where I'm starting.
I mean, I loved her in her Sonogram. I thought she was great in that.
Yeah, but did you see it in 3D?
Yeah, it hit me in the face.
Okay.
That's how I knew she was a girl.
Anyway, I mean, I think she'll be good.
Okay. Well, I'm excited.
From what
about
I've seen in the trailer, it looks like she's playing it I don't know, in a
pretty
realistic
close to the breast.
Way. Yeah, pretty.
Come on, that's funny. All right. Next news, and again, generally women themed.
Generally,
course,
Bechdel test. Because this podcast passes the Bechdel test right now.
Yes.
Although we did talk about Ricky earlier.
Yes.
Maybe we can edit that out.
No. He's an important part of the show.
Just kidding.
It doesn't mean we can't have other conversations about Ricky. It's just like at one point we have to talk not about Ricky.
It was a joke.
I know, Rhea. So Thor is a woman.
Yes.
Thor is a woman.
Yep. Easy as that. Just made her a woman.
Can you believe that was my response?
Yep.
Was that that's what it's going to take for there to be a big female superhero? Is that they're just going to take an existing superhero, and then one day they're just going to say, oh, actually, that's a woman.
Yep.
How do you think that's going to go over? What's going to happen? What's the future of Thor? Should we care about this? What's going on?
I think that we should care about this, because I think, I've seen people talking on the internet, and by that I mean the people that I happen to know on Facebook. But just because I know that there is going to be, just devastating, caustic comments about Thor being a woman now that I just didn't even want to get into it, but I also know that people are upset about it. But what's interesting to me is that there are all these excuses and reasons and people say this about gay characters or gay all that kind of stuff about black characters, they're just doing it. It's just a rating stunt, or they're just trying to sell more. If you think that not every minute detail of every piece of entertainment and media that you consume hasn't been, just absolutely...
What are you talking about? Whipped cream vodka is delicious. That's why
hasn't been,
people drink it.
The lampshades in the background of Mad Men weren't picked to make people want to watch the show. Every single detail is to boost sales.
You're saying, entertainment is an industry?
Yes. It's a cottage industry.
Yeah. Rhea, I think that's a great point, and I do agree with you that people overlook it, and some stunts are okay.
It's an easy... That argument made, I think, mostly by, liberal, left-leaning, so-called open people are like, oh, it's just for this. It's a really easy way to brush so-called progress, under the rug.
Right.
To just be like, oh, who cares? Also, it's like everything needs to be so pure. No, it doesn't. We need more women represented in movies, in media, in culture, in everything. And we need more people of color, specifically women of color. So, this makes me really happy to see Thor as a woman, but I will be even happier when I see, a mainstream comic with a black woman in it.
I mean, I agree with you, and I think it's a... I think that's kind of this. I mean, you're kind of talking about affirmative action, and when people are like,
"Yes,
why would we?"
Oh, now there's reverse racism.
Why do we need to choose anybody that's different? If people are the same, then people are the same. And the reason you need to choose somebody that's different is because if you're having conversations and there's a plurality of voices and experiences, the conversation is going to get better. It's going to improve the more different the viewpoints are.
Yes.
And even if it's just one person popped in there. So I agree. Yay for Thor.
And also,
I'm calling her Thur.
No.
TM.
Thor.
TM on the show.
No.
I want to say one final thing about this,
which is that
it's the perfect character to do this for because Thor is a god.
About Thor.
number one, that. But also, Thor is a god.
Yeah.
So gods can be anything.
Right.
I think starting with something that's not limited by humanity is actually a really strong choice.
But it's also funny. Okay, so you mean just in the fact that Thor, the character, is a god.
Yes.
It can be made into whatever you want it to be because it's not. Okay.
Because we don't know God.
But what
that
I also.
That guy's not real, but he might be a couch.
But what I also like about it is that Thor, as opposed to, I think, any of the major comic book superheroes that are all made up. Somebody made them up at some point.
What
and
do
they
you mean?
Chose to make them up the way they did, so we can make them do whatever they want. The interesting thing, actually, that I find about Thor is that Thor has some historical context as an actual being that existed in other cultures, culturally represented. He has a Nordic,
you
all
mean
this stuff.
Like a Viking? Because He's a Norse god, right?
Yes.
So you're saying that
what I'm
it's
saying
not
is it's
American?
Actually
it's based
no,
on
I'm
something
just saying
larger.
Superman just was made up in 19
well,
whatever.
I don't know if you know this about religion, but somebody made that up too.
I know. But what I'm saying is Superman has allegories to Jesus Christ. Yes. Did those two guys sit down and say, like, let's make a superhero based off of Jesus Christ? No.
Well, you're saying
what I'm
the
saying
trajectory
is
even longer.
It's an even crazier choice to me to take one comic book character that has a historical context greater than the comic book itself. Its context outweighs the actual comic book life. And to make that character a woman, I think is actually really risky and progressive. That's my point.
Well, I love that point.
It's very long-winded. I'm sorry.
In conclusion, would like to say that one final thing that's amazing is that Thor is strong.
Yes.
That's like one of Thor's things. Thor smash you with a hammer.
Smashy.
And so that's rad also. I'm glad it's not like Arrow's guy. What's that dude's name?
Hawkeye?
Yeah.
Although Hawkeye's been turned
or
into
like
a woman a bunch of times.
No, I know, but I mean
in that amazing Tumblr that we've referenced before.
Right. I just mean like I'm glad it's not somebody who has these skills that I think so often are actually left to female superheroes. Like our existing female superheroes.
You mean like tiny
like,
guns?
I have tiny guns or a lasso. Yeah. You know, like Thor just is a big
I'm a botanist.
Smasher. So anyway, great. We will be back with a with a remembrance of things past right after this.
Hi,
my name's Dave.
And my name's Graham.
Now, what do we have to do to put you in a brand new podcast today?
Yeah,
what, do you want me to drink bleach? I'll do it.
Yeah, Dave will drink bleach.
If that's what it takes to get you to listen to Stop Podcasting Yourself on MaximumFun.org.
Don't make Dave drink bleach. Just listen to the show. He will, but don't make him.
Stop Podcasting Yourself.
And welcome back. Now, sometimes in this part of the show, we have a pitch it segment. Today, we're doing something else. It's our other favorite segment to do, movies that made us. This is us talking about movies that made us the people that we are today, expanded our minds, introduced us to concepts and the world. And now today, since we are reviewing Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, I wanted to talk about animal movies. Because when you see this movie, it has way more apes than the previous one, which you did not see.
I did not see it. No.
And that's great, because get as much James Franco out of your life as possible.
Sure. Yeah.
But that has like a kind of a minimal ape involvement. This has as many apes as, you know, the original movie, but they're not humans wearing costumes. They're computer generated. So they look very apey.
Very apey.
Yeah. Like more apey than the apes in 2001. Given that those are the standard of apes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so that affected me, watching a movie that stars animals. I mean, because some of them are moderately humanoid, but they're also realistically animals.
Yes.
When you were watching this movie, were you connecting with them? Because I think the other thing that they're doing is, obviously, they're also, like, super anthropomorphized, so you are connecting to them as if they are people.
Yes.
But you also are connecting to them as if they are animals.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely some Milo and Otis moments in there. Where, like, I knew that my reaction was heightened because it was an animal, not a person.
Okay.
I mean, because I am very sensitive to animal movies and animals in movies, even if it is not an animal movie per se. And I know that was triggering that part of me of, like, fear for them.
Interesting, because I think another thing that this brought up for me was that, you know, the animals in this are obviously, well, not obviously, the in this, and this is going to spoil something, but in this part of the story, we learn that these apes evolved at a rapid rate because of animal testing.
Okay.
And so that happened in the last movie, and then that's the world we live in now. And so they are victims, even though they're completely sentient and, like, also can sort of speak. They're still victims in this story. And I think that they're being animals, obviously, makes that even easier to believe in this particular. The horror element of the original Planet of the Apes is not a part of this storyline.
You mean the original, the Charlton Heston one?
Yes.
Yes.
So when Charlton Heston lands, we're supposed to be, like, horrified.
Yes.
By these apes.
Right.
But now they are the victims.
Correct.
Okay. So I just wanted to talk about the history of that in movies and maybe why we see animals that way. Because, you know, going back to something like Jaws, I think Jaws is a movie that really allowed us to connect to our fear of the wild and also to talk about dominance.
I mean,
if you haven't seen the movie Jaws, Jaws don't make it.
Yep.
And the whole point is how impressive that is. It's like Rocky lasting the rounds. It's the point of the movie is that man can dominate beast.
Yes.
And the scariest thing that could happen is being out of control.
For sure.
And then you look at something like Free Willy. And that animal in that situation is in a zoo. And we've, like, come far enough that we feel bad about mastering an animal. Because the whole point is about
freeing Willy. You know, I'm going to tell you something.
What's that?
I've never seen Free Willy.
Oh, really?
Never seen it all the way through. Because, again, animal movies.
I think you'd have a hard time with it.
I know I would have a hard time with it. That's why I didn't watch it.
Well, you know, it also,
when I was
at
a kid,
the time that it was filmed, and it's pretty awful, actually, because I remember this being a big deal from our childhood. Because I was like 92, 93, mm-hmm, around then, and Keiko, the Willy, he lived in a crappy facility in Mexico City,
mm-hmm,
and was not very well taken care of and didn't have a lot of space. That's actually where they filmed the movie. And he, the movie, they didn't expect it to be a hit. It's a huge hit. And people are like, hey, let's meet the star. And then a ton of media attention goes to the fact that he's not being well taken care of. So they built him his own, like, state-of-the-art aquarium off of the, I think, Oregon coast. And then he lived there for a while, getting used to salt water. And then they eventually put him in, like, essentially a bag, like an open air or like an open water bag, and put him further out into the ocean. And they tried to reintroduce him to, like, the wild,
mm-hmm,
but he died, I think, at like 26 or something, like 28, which is
in the wild. He died
yes,
in the wild.
Yes, he died in the wild. But they were monitoring him. Like,
sure,
he wasn't just, like, actually freed, but, like, he didn't jump over a young boy while Michael Jackson sang or anything. But the point just being that I think that's a process that's very hard to reverse.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, an orca, I mean, that is in captivity that relies on humans, and then one is saved. And I'm not saying that
oh,
was
sure,
the wrong
yeah.
thing that happened to him, but it just, like, didn't go that well, and it wasn't that easy, and they tried, and, you know, you can't, like, we can't let our chihuahua live in
sure,
the
no,
world.
I mean,
he won't make
we
it.
We can't put him in a canyon and expect him to, like, have a tent or anything. It would be a pup tent for sure. But yeah, he doesn't know how to drive stakes into the ground.
No.
He would die immediately. Well, I mean, that is one of the reasons, and I've talked about this on the show before, I am a serious vegetarian, never eaten meat in my life. That's just who I am now, you know? Like, I don't know. I couldn't imagine myself eating meat just because I never have. So why would I even think about it? But in that vein of, like, being raised a vegetarian for moral reasons by my mom, I also didn't watch a lot of the movies with animals in them because my mom knew the other side of the movies, which is that, you know, more often than not, animals are not treated very well. I think it's a lot better now, but Free Willy was in 1992. It's not that long ago. So, like, specifically, I made a reference to Milo and Otis. I was not allowed to watch that movie because my mom knew that all those kittens and puppies were killed making that movie.
What?
They go through, like, a river.
They're,
like,
killed?
Yes. They did not make that movie was not made here. It was made somewhere else with that does not have strict like animal rule laws.
I didn't know anything about this. Also, yes. Never seen that movie.
Like tons of those animals were killed. I don't mean to be like a super downer,
no,
but
I
we're talking about
say,
animals.
I mean, it
movies.
Is good that we have a we have oversight for this now. I mean, I worked on a television show with an animal,
with a cat
that had a trainer with it, and that cat just seemed like honestly, it was just a cat.
Sure.
Because like it was working for a reward. But that's not a sad life for a cat. It's just a cat with a job.
No, I mean, it's like, it's a cat that just gets out of the house a lot.
Yeah,
more.
Like,
but I'm talking about like large scale. Milo Notice is cats and dogs, but I mean, large scale, like orcas and horses and all that stuff. These days, it's a lot better. But if you go back and watch old westerns, like when horses fall, they're tripping them, you know? Like they're falling. Yeah.
I don't know any of this stuff you're saying to me.
They used to put piano wire across things and then they
sausages.
Would have the horse run and then it trips and falls.
What like, the hell? Did you see Project X? I've never seen it.
I saw it when I was a kid and I've blocked out a lot of the information because it was so devastating.
And the reason I bring that up is that obviously I think it's probably the most relevant movie to this particular movie because that film also came out right around the time that, you know, of course, film always reflects what we're talking about in our culture. And so we just started talking about animal testing, which I think really hit like a boom in the kind of the 80s where we just like
late 80s
first became aware of it, that oh, where's my shampoo come from, and the little you know pictures with the sad little
and
rabbits
I'm sure
with
that
their
like,
eyes all hurt.
Jane Goodall had a lot to do with that too.
Yes understanding Jane Goodall and like realizing that chimps are smart, but also just like PETA, you know, I think that it just came to a different kind of boiling point. Also, we were doing a lot more, you know, culturally it makes sense.
I mean, the
production
early
was
90s,
in a different place,
late 80s is like a time of like, you know, political revolt, basically, which we're now paying for by all these conservatives being back to the affirmative action thing.
Wow,
like,
I can't believe this is where
all
we got
of this stuff is happening. So it makes sense that people would be like, but wait, but where does my shampoo come from? You know, makes
so
sense for all that
I
stuff.
I looked
to come
up the end of Project X, and this is the final thing we'll say about this before we go into a review. I looked up the end because I had never seen it. And do you remember the ending at all?
Mildly.
So, like, Matthew Broderick and Helen Hunt, little babies, they escape with a chimp that's going to be irradiated to death to test for pilots. Mm-hmm. They escape and they save him. And then they just crash land in the Everglades. And the chimp, like, waves and signs, like, I love you, goodbye. And then the chimp leaves. And I was also thinking about how much that is of the time. Like, we're not even making these movies anymore, so maybe we care less now. But, like, the idea, and that's not, it's pretty true in Free Willy, too, but, like, the idea that it would be a better life for a chimp.
Yes.
To be, like, rescued from a lab, but then crash land in the Florida Everglades?
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily an indigenous chimp
zone.
Yeah,
their native
and
habitat.
Then just be on its own.
Sure.
I mean, I'm pretty sure
like
this
a
guy
chimp
wears
that's
clothes.
Like, never lived outside of captivity.
Right. A chimp that's, like, banana?
It's
like,
only
that
like
chimp.
Eating peanut butter ice cream and stuff.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It's,
but isn't that the 90s, though? Like, we just were like, yeah.
Everything's fixed.
Everything's fine.
Got it. Yeah.
Bye. You know, and then just like.
And then 9/11 happened.
Yeah. And I mean, Jaws to me is, because I came out in, what, 75? So that's like right near the end of Vietnam. I mean, we've definitely been in Vietnam for a long time. Because Jaws to me feels like Vietnam, where everybody's like, kill it. Just kill it. Just kill it. Just get it out of here. Just stop it. We don't want to see it anymore. Just
so,
get rid of it.
Like, moment of national.
Just get rid of it. Yeah,
strife, and we want to like salt. We want to feel
just
dominant.
It. Just
and
stop
then,
it.
And like the 80s and 90s is just like everything's fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah. So, chill out. The chimp's gonna be fine.
Yeah.
Well, the chimp is not gonna be fine, and we will find out why when we review Dawn of the Planet of the Apes right after this.
Hi, my name is Hrishikesh Hirway, and I have a podcast called Song Exploder. In each episode, a musician takes apart one of their songs and piece by piece tells you the story of how it was made. You get an inside look into the creative and technical process and a unique view of a song by hearing just the drums, or just the guitars, or say, just a Wurlitzer piano. If you're a fan of music, if you make music, or if you just like to learn how things are made, come check it out on MaximumFun.org. Thanks.
Thank you. now is the time of the show. Oh, welcome back. Also, I forgot to say, I mean, how was it? Was that great for you guys?
It was a fun little
missed
break there.
Ya. Now's the time of the show when we give you a brief review of a dick flick. This week we chose Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which is currently in theaters. Spoilers do follow. Now, this movie is directed by Matt Reeves, which I didn't know is the reason Kerry Russell is in it. Because I didn't realize, okay, this is this guy's filmography. What? What? Okay, let's start from more recent, because I feel like the big reveal is at the end. So he directed Let Me In, the American version. Let the right one in.
Yeah.
So he directed Let Me In. He directed Cloverfield. So even those two movies is like, one is a, you know, wobbly cam, a found footage movie.
Yep.
The other one is a like quirky horror movie. So those are different, you know, not necessarily an obvious through line. Those are the two things he's done. And then also created and directed Felicity.
There you go.
So that's a breadth.
I don't know. That seems part and parcel.
Does
to
it?
Just go all together.
Felicity right to like, New York is attacked.
Yeah.
Actually, they both take place in New York. Cloverfield and Felicity both take place in New York. And I don't know if you remember this, but Cloverfield monster went to NYU.
Yeah. They're both coming of age stories.
Yeah. Dean and DeLuca.
They're trying to find themselves.
Mm-hmm. Scott Speedman.
Yeah.
So hilarious that that's that guy. I didn't realize. And this movie stars Kerry Russell. She's in this movie. God, it's weird to see Kerry Russell looking now aged.
Yeah, but she also doesn't look... that woman doesn't age.
No, she's super young, but she's super young looking. I just mean, like, she was a teen star. You
sure.
know, it's like anytime you see Mark Paul Gosselaar, you're like, oh, you're an attractive man. You look great, but also, you know, genuinely weird to see you. Not in
weird that you're
a horizontally striped T-shirt.
Yeah.
So she's in this, and Andy Serkis, of course, does the motion cap for the lead chimp, Caesar.
Caesar.
And he's a little bit of a weird look. He's half evolved more, because he stands more erect and stuff than the other
animals.
Yeah,
he's more of a person.
And Gary Oldman is in this, which I wish he wasn't.
Also, and who cares? It's kind of crazy that he's in this.
It is crazy.
I guess they needed some
At this
names
point,
or
you
whatever,
need,
but...
even, but also if you're Gary Oldman, like, you kind of need your, like, I find a lot of men in his age range are just popping their names on this type of film.
Sure.
That's not that strange to me.
I read in
summer blockbuster, this dude makes sense.
The interview where he acts like an idiot, I read some other parts of it because I wanted to see the context for those comments that he made. And he is one of those dudes that, like, doesn't think anything that he's done is good, basically.
Oh, really?
So, like, he's just kind of like, who cares, basically. And it's just like, nothing is good enough. Like, I don't know. What do you want to be doing? Shakespeare?
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Like, you're an actor. This is the job. Just be fine with it.
And
or
then,
shut up or something. I don't know.
Oh, God, all those comments.
You took the roles. Like, you took the roles. And people like you in them. And don't be mad at people because they like you in it.
I think he's pretty insufferable.
Like, just get out
board,
of your own butt.
Which is why I like him in The Fifth Element, because he's supposed to be insufferable.
Yeah.
He's perfect.
But don't tell him he was good in it, because he'll just be disappointed. So,
yes. Sorry to disappoint
easy.
You. You know, also, Judy Greer?
Yeah.
Judy Greer, now
yeah.
she is a female character actor who's been in a lot of stuff.
And has a great book
she
out.
She has a book out about being a character actor, but you probably know her best from, like, Arrested Development.
Yeah.
She's
Kitty.
Yes. So she does the motion cap for the female ape.
For the mom. Yeah.
Right. For the
who
for
has
Caesar's
a name, but...
counter... I think it's Cornelia.
Yeah,
after
it's
Cornelia. Cornelius,
yeah.
Who's the, like... young and sporty ape in the original movie.
Roddy McDowell.
And I would never have thought that was her.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to tell.
Yes. I mean, but Andy Serkis, Caesar looks like Andy
sure,
Serkis.
Sure, but and none of the other apes are...
They're not as humanoid.
...articulated in the face as his is.
Also, she doesn't
like
really do anything that's specific to anybody. Like,
yeah.
And I don't mean this.
I just mean
the role is like
the ape
walk around
was
like
wearing
an ape.
A T-shirt and then lifted the T-shirt and said, "Say goodbye to these." Then I'd be like, "Is that Judy Greer?" But other than that, I don't know that I would be like, oh, I think that ape is Judy Greer back
there. So then it's funny to use somebody who's so specifically skilled in comedy.
Yes.
Because she, I mean, she's a great actor, but she's funny. That is not a funny role.
Yeah. I mean, I could see how you would want to use like a
physical
comedic actor because, yes, you're more in control of your body than maybe
I mean,
some
and
people.
Hats off to her. She did a great job. It just like surprised
me. Yeah, I think she was great. It just, there's no, I mean, I will watch it again to see if I could tell knowing now that she is, but I honestly don't think that I could.
It's like the role of the ring was played by Melissa McCarthy.
She didn't even say anything.
The ring was from Lord of the Rings.
Great job.
All right. So anyway, Jason Clarke also is like the one guy. He's the lead human dude.
Right.
And the only reason I want to bring up his name is because he was in The Great Gatsby, and he did a great job. He was like George Wilson in that.
Yep.
He's really downtrodden. And
I actually think he is, he's like a great new character actor.
I thought he was eating a big pile of poop.
Really?
In this movie. Yeah.
Wow. I actually felt like he did a good job of being like banal enough that you could place yourself in.
Fair enough.
Him.
I mean, he's a void.
Yeah. I mean, he's like.
Is that a good thing?
Jeremy Renner, basically. He's the new Jeremy Renner.
Sure.
I feel like.
Okay. Just something to say right up top. So this film also features a ton of outdoor motion capture. One of the biggest sets is jungle space, and the apes live there, and all of these actors are walking around in full motion cap suits actually outside. It is amazing how this looks. It is amazing how this looks.
When we were looking at the,
you will not believe how this movie looks.
When we were looking at the motion capture photos, I was like, it just looks so cool because they put like things on their arms so that their arms were long. You know, that the cameras could, like, read the ends of their arms so that it looked right. And, I mean, there were times where I was, like, going, what? These are fake, right? You know, like, they really, there are some points where I thought, like, did they just use, like, animal stand-ins because it was easier than making the hair? Because, like, it really looks.
I think they did an amazing job of making of the realism here. And that's why I think it's so interesting, because we are relating to these apes as if they are people. One big point that I probably was going to bring up later, but I'll just say it now, is this movie is also very nonverbal because it's apes communicating with other apes. Sometimes it's subtitled. Sometimes it's literally them being like, wah! And then there's a subtitle for that. Yeah. They use a lot of gestures. They use some English speech, and that conveys everything. That's all you need. Now, for that to happen in a blockbuster summer action movie, I don't think that's ever happened. And then also, there are moments when they're interacting with each other. It's all facial and it's all body. It's something from, you know, WALL-E is, I think, the last time I saw something where there was this much nonverbal communication happening.
Sure.
And for this to happen in a huge blockbuster action movie, I just, unbelievable job to all the actors and the director for pulling that off.
Yeah, absolutely. The other movie that I referenced when we were talking about this specific point was Inglourious Basterds, which is not nonverbal, but it is not English. And so it's crazy to make a movie that is not English, you know?
I mean, sure. And I'll say, I think Quentin Tarantino, of course, you're right, did take a risk to do that. But also, you know, he's so snooty.
Oh, sure.
That anybody that goes to see his movie is going to be like, oh, what a cool choice.
Absolutely. It did really well.
This is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
This would be like if The Dark Knight was
French. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. A silent movie is even better. This is mostly a silent movie. It's unreal for that reason.
And it's
holy crap.
For that reason, it's like amazing that, like, hey, we're actually smart people still. People will see this. People won't walk out of the theater because they have to read for 2 seconds.
I agree.
Like,
I
just trust your audience
a lot of hope.
A little bit, you know?
Because this is a stupid movie. You know, like, it's what I mean is, like, it's a joyride. So,
yeah.
Then let's test our people. Like,
push it.
If a joyride, yeah, if a joyride can have subtitled apes talking, I think we're okay. I was very proud of us, too. Nice point, Rhea. And just to generally give the plot, and this is going to be very spoilery, so an ape flu, which is caused by humans,
simian flu,
caught on with the rest of the world's population. Most of the people in the world died from it. There is a colony of people that are immune to the simian flu.
Genetically.
They live in the ruins of San Francisco, there is a colony of apes live up in the jungle nearby or woods or whatever. And the two colonies don't know about each other. So this movie is about them running into each other and then kind of fighting for dominance.
It's a bit of an ecotone.
Fighting for survival.
If you will.
Now, Rhea, what is the worst part of this movie?
Well, there are many. I think that I'll give you two quick ones. Number one, I found the score to be very obnoxious and distracting.
Bad score.
It's like a super nerdy thing. The music itself, not bad.
It's a lot of violence.
The timing of it, I felt to be very off, and it was confusing me what I was supposed to be like feeling and concentrating on, because like when the dude, I don't even remember his name, but like when main human tries to go back to their ape compound, there's like this huge swell. And you think it's going to the camera's going to turn and reveal something that he's seeing for the first time and we're seeing for the first time. And then it's just nothing. And he just keeps walking.
Here's what I think happened with this. I think they put that score in because the movie was too unbalanced in favor of the apes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I noticed when they would do that ground swell type of sound that it was when we were supposed to be feeling for the human characters. But the human characters are the least interesting part of this movie by far. So it didn't work. Like, just let it be about the apes.
Sure.
Have the humans be stupid. That's fine. You know, and I feel like it was very forced. Like, there was even a moment where they, like, ooh, they turn on electricity and they find, like, old CDs and stuff. And I just didn't think that the characters had rich enough development for me to really put myself in their shoes.
Sure.
I was in the non-shoes of the apes.
I was in the
little baby hairy feet of the apes.
Yeah. I mean,
I didn't feel for the people in this movie.
It was confusing because you feel like the movie is pretty one-sided for the apes, that it is an ape story, that it's not really our story. And then to try to put that, shoehorn that in,
it
just doesn't make any sense.
It didn't work.
And then my other one is definitely like the lady problem. Because Carrie Russell is a great character actor as well. And it just stinks when you have, you know, four or five human characters with lines and all of them but one are a woman. And then the woman is the one that serves as the exposition. It's pretty frustrating.
You know what it reminded me of also? Because it like happens in tents and stuff. And she's like rubbing his back basically and being like, you're the only one that could do this. I was like, this is Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about that is that the whole point of Game of Thrones is like, what if women had to do everything behind the scenes because they didn't yet have power?
Right.
So it's weird to see a movie that's supposed to be
the future
where it's like,
where
what if women had to do everything behind the scenes because they didn't have any power? Like, she's just fucking do it yourself.
Yeah,
you don't need that guy.
Yeah.
You have more medical training than he does. You're more skilled
than like
he is.
World War Z.
But World War Z, at least, like, Brad Pitt had an obvious skill.
No, that's what I'm saying.
What is this guy's skill?
They took, because we were complaining about that with World War Z, that this guy is, like, so competent, and then his wife does nothing. So then in this instance, like, Carrie Russell is so competent, and yet she still does nothing.
Right.
Like, just either don't put women in the movie.
She's, like, taking out bullets.
Or, like, allow her to do something other than be a nurse. Or like
the
Iron Man thing.
I also didn't get nurse. I thought she was a doctor.
Okay, well maybe it's the, you know, sexism.
Yeah,
it's
so you're a sexist.
Inherent in my own brain. But I'm just saying, like, it's so.
Yes, I agree. I mean, because it's not like the leader guy isn't like some military expert. He's just like has a big heart. Well, just let the fucking female doctor do it. But anyway, my point is, my worst part is I hated the human colony design. Not only did I hate the human element and I just didn't think they were interesting, but every time we went to San Francisco, I was just like, I don't care about this. I feel like they could have
been. And it was because of the design, or it was just because you didn't care?
It looked very set-y, and they were trying to make me care about things.
Do you mean the actual place that they were living in, or San Francisco as a whole?
The actual place they lived in.
Okay.
Like, the little, like, colony itself just looked.
Yeah, the, like, I think it was, like, the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, it just looked like Indiana Jones level of set design, and the rest of this movie is now. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it would be weird to have a perfect CG, like, computer-generated ape be the little thing that Indy grabs and then replaces with a bag of sand. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. So, anyway, I thought that it looked bad, and I thought it was boring. So, get the fucking humans out of it next time. Okay, Rhea, what's the best part of this movie?
I think that I did really enjoy this movie a lot, and there are a lot of things that I really liked about it. But one, if I had to boil it down to one moment, I think that that moment of pure cinematic joy based off of a historical film context, a historical context, like what our world actually is, and the like just blissful release that you can only have in a dark theater with a bunch of other humans, which is watching this movie and the people are, the human beings are like exploring, trying to find this dam very near the beginning of the movie, and they're all, the apes are hunting and everything, and they sort of confront each other. They don't know what to do. And then all of a sudden Caesar says, "Go!" And they just, like, the, that
you
scene is so amazing.
You haven't heard them talk at this point.
You haven't heard them speak.
So you don't know that they can.
And that, like, tension-breaking moment is so great, you know?
Yeah, it's like, super effective.
That moment was us getting to live the moment of seeing Planet of the Apes for the first time. Because, like, none of us really, none of us got to see that.
Yeah.
None of us got to have our Prince Purple Rain moment because that movie was parodied so many times that, like, to watch it, it didn't have the
Prince
impact.
Purple Rain moment.
I keep using that because, like, I brought this up on the podcast, like, a year ago, but his Purple Rain video, where a lot of it was used for the actual recording of the song. But it's him playing Purple Rain, like, the very first time, and the whole audience doesn't know the song. Like, and it's a huge song. Like, everybody knows that song. But these are all Prince fans watching Prince play a song that they've never heard before that's going to be a huge hit that you're never going to not know it.
So is the monkey the guitar or Prince?
The monkey is Purple Rain itself. Anyway,
I think you're making a great point, and I
love that.
I agree. There were a lot of those reveals in here for me. I thought it was probably one of the most exciting uses of computer-generated technology I've seen in a long time. And I'm hugely into this, and so I really, it was fun to watch it not work. Like, when the apes were wet, they looked strange, and it was when it was full sunlight, they looked strange. So there was they haven't figured out necessarily how to do shine on hair or fur yet, whatever you would call that. But when it was dark or they were like more matte, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. I mean, that movie doesn't exist. Like, right now we are seeing movies that were never shot. Yep. Like, actors did things, but that is not what we are watching.
Right.
And that's true of every scene in this movie, because there's very few scenes that just have humans in them. So almost every scene in this movie is not what was originally there. It's just really nice use of that. And so I was really, really proud of it and like just excited to see it. So good job, guys, and great job with the nonverbal stuff. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 5, outfits that are too clean for the apocalypse, because you know they
brand
got
new
them
clothes
brand
from
new
Urban
shirts
Outfitters
on in this movie. What do you give Dawn of the Planet of the Apes?
I give it 3.5 shirts that are way too clean.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. I had a great time. But a lot of it was, while I enjoyed the, like, allegories of it, that you could argue that the apes are basically any oppressed minority in our current culture, standing in for that, which I think is open-ended, but it also was like a little heavy-handed.
And sure. I mean, I also think it's about cycle, though, because if you think about it, the apes are just us.
Right. No,
like,
I mean,
we're just going to create ourselves again. We're just going to destroy and create ourselves forever.
Yes.
So okay. I give Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, I think I give it 4 goes.
Okay. But what was your scale? You didn't give me
on a scale of 1 to 5 goes.
1 to 5 goes. I'm sorry, I missed it.
Yeah,
or
I give
you
it
didn't say
4
it.
Goes on a scale of 1 to 5 goes, because that's honestly mostly on merit. Like, it's so fun to watch this movie. I don't know if I would ever see it again. I don't know that I would want to watch it at home, but like maybe. But it's just the merit here is. I hope that
absolutely.
I hope that we see more movies where Matt Reeves gets to use computer-generated imagery. Okay. Now, we'll leave you with this. What are you thinking about this week, Rhea?
This week, I'm thinking about a couple of things. Number one, Well, let's see. I read the book David and Goliath by Malcolm Gladwell. Now, I know Malcolm Gladwell's books are basically long magazines, but they're easy to read.
They are and long magazines. His hair is sort of a long
yeah,
magazine.
His hair is a long magazine. And I love nonfiction. I'm not a big fiction reader. I know that's stupid, but
why is it stupid? That's okay.
I don't know. It's silly. I should read fiction. I should get into somebody else's mind.
I don't know.
I just like storing data in my own. I love footnotes.
I think it's completely your personality.
And I really dug it. It took a minute to get into it, but I really did dig it. It's a great sort of, I don't know, behind the curtain of things that we...
Behind the candelabra?
Behind the candelabra of things that we don't really... You know, like the story of David and Goliath is actually the opposite of what we... interpreted it to be, and then a bunch of stories about that. I found it fascinating. And then speaking of David and Goliath sort of stories, Alice Coachman, she just passed away a couple days ago. Whenever this comes out, she will have passed away a couple days ago at, I believe, 90. And she was the first black woman to win an Olympic medal, and she won the gold for track in 1948. And
What's up, Alice?
Did not know about her until I just found out. And then I read a couple obits of her. And, you know, she won this medal. She had to wait because the World War II kept the 44 Olympics and the 40 Olympics. So she had to wait 8 years to compete in the Olympics. And people, including her dad, told her, you shouldn't be into sports. You should do something else like ballet or dancing because that's what women do. And she also won a gold medal and had to go home to the segregated South where when she the city received her, she had to use a separate entrance and the mayor would not shake her hand for winning a gold medal. So we have come a very long way, but we still have a long way to go. And I have been trying to educate myself on, like, women that have done amazing things, fought and served in wars, and nobody talks about them because they're women. And then also black women, and nobody talks about them because they're black women. And I think that, you know, someone like Alice Coachman, people should know about her and talk about her and think about her because we wouldn't be where we are today if it wasn't for women like her.
Well, that's amazing. I'm so glad you told me her name because I didn't know anything about that gal. And it is interesting, though, some part of what you said, because I'm going to talk about Girls Just Want to Have Fun, which we watched. It's on Netflix. It's a movie from my childhood that was very important to me growing up. And we watched it not too long ago, a couple days ago. And unfortunately, very sad to find out it's not a good movie.
It didn't hold up in your mind.
It doesn't have a plot, per se. A lot of the conflict doesn't make any sense. Why is her dad locking her up in a jail prison in her room? There's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense. This movie is about teenagers who want to dance. And it's not like dance means sex the way that like Footloose is. Like there isn't the, it's not necessarily like about the Bible. Nobody's like fucking in a haystack. Like, sorry if that was a little too, I don't know, maybe,
pretty
you're,
raunchy.
Maybe you're at work. I'll turn it down in the past. But my point is, in this movie, it's just kids who want to have their own lives and their parents not being able to process that. And some of them are men.
Yeah.
Boys. Just,
right.
Just, guys. And nobody makes a gay joke.
Yeah, there's no
there's
gay joke.
There's not a gay joke in this movie. They're just like, there's a flexed out shirtless dude who's just supposed to be hot. He rides a motorcycle.
He's supposed to go to tech school.
He wears only sleeveless shirts. He's blue collar. He's tough. It's like if Billy Elliot was Wolverine.
Yep.
Like, that's what this movie is about. And nobody brings that up. The reason his dad's against it is because he is like making a non-blue collar
decision.
There's
no money in it.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not a sure thing.
And so like, watching this movie again with where we're at right now and everybody, like the touchiness of so many male characters,
yeah,
just like
a lot of gay panic,
a lot of
and
gay
romance
panic, and also just
like
a lot of, yeah, like the whole like, hey man, like the whole I love you man thing. Like, this movie is refreshing,
yeah,
and awesome. And I like love this male character. He's like kind of a jerk, but like it's just, he has like a passion.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And that passion is dancing.
It's awesome. And if you haven't seen it or you don't remember that that's a big part of it, rewatch it. Not a good movie.
Not a good movie.
But man, are they dancing in heaven.
You can toss it on.
I never thought.
And I forgot I wanted to mention the gal that just won the Ninja Ultimate Warrior or whatever. If you haven't watched her win, she's the first woman to win.
Which is a silly reality show.
It's a silly reality show.
But she is doing some wacky stuff with her bod.
It's insane to see because
yeah,
I've only seen men do it, and they're always like super flexed out huge dudes, and I've never seen anybody complete
it. She weighs 100 pounds.
And to watch her do it, I was just like, she is in a zone that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
I mean, it is like serious athleticism and athletic intelligence, which is
like
what's amazing about
American's
it.
American baby gladiator.
Yes, but if it was actually hard.
Okay. Sassy at the end.
No offense to
I'm going to tell Gina
the
Carano.
American gladiators out there. Sorry, Blaze.
All right. Well, until next week, when we will be watching and reviewing Stolen.
Oh,
I
yes.
will not be here. Ricky and Rhea will be doing it instead.
I'm so happy
so
about
please
it.
Please watch Stolen on Netflix. Watch Insta.
You guys, it's going to be fun.
Until then, I'm Cameron Esposito.
I'm Rhea Butcher.
And you've been listening to Wham Bam Pow. Wham Bam Pow is recorded at Maximum Fun, headquarters by Lindsay Pavlis. Thank you, Lindsay. Maximum Fun. Thank you for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.